Barry Geoghegan is an Irish horse racing legend. From his first win in 1997, he's gone on to ride almost 2,000 winners, making him the fourth most successful jumps jockey of all time. With the second most win at Cheltenham in the sport's history, he's worked with all the greats, Moscow Flyer, Kicking King and Monty's Pass. He's written about it in his autobiography called True Colours, described as an intelligent and often beautifully observed book and a must read about a career which has never dropped out of Top Gear by none other than the Racing Post. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from somewhere in Ireland, Barry himself. Barry, good morning to you.
Morning, James.
Hello, Barry, can you hear me? Always happens. You're there, Barry. Sorry, start again. You see, always happens when I give somebody a sterling introduction like that, something goes wrong. Barry, how are you this morning?
I'm very good, Jess. How are you?
Well, you know, not too bad. Another day on the Costa del Sol. It could be worse. It's been a career, the Racing Post, a career that's never dropped out of Top Gear.
No, it was, I suppose it was a hectic lifestyle, and I would have only realised that when I stepped away 12 months ago. So, it was always pretty much high speed. If you weren't busy racing, you were busy recuperating with a broken arm or a broken leg or something. So it was, the wheel was always turning.
I mean, jumps jockey, jumps racing is intensely physical, isn't it? And it's interesting you say recovery, because, you know, we're used to reading books about the glory and the triumphs, but especially in your particular branch of equestrian sport, there are periods. Do you have to take it as granted that you are going to get injured at some point during your career?
Yeah, you do, yeah. And it's only ever around the corner. You don't know when it's going to come, obviously, but it happens. You could go 5 years without any injury, and then bang, you could do two broken arms, and I did it in the space of a year. So it can come at any time or anything. So you get used to it, and as soon as you hit the ground and you realize what you've done, you start trying to figure out how long it's going to take you to go back. So You're always trying to work against the clock on recovery.
So where did it all start then, Barry? When did you decide that, did you grow up around horses? Was it horses in the family? I mean, how did you actually decide you're going to make your career out of this?
Yeah, I grew up around horses on a farm, riding ponies, and just progressed from there through pony club, pony racing. And I suppose at the age of 15, I would have dreamt of being a jockey. I would hoped and dreamt, but you know, those dreams don't always come true. And fortunately for me, they did. So it was all I wanted to do. I had no plan B, and I was all in as regards to be a jockey from the age of 16. That was where I committed everything into.
So tell me about it. Talk me through that first race then, that first jumps meet. You know, you're 16, you're very much a boy amongst men, you're looking at the fences. I mean, how on earth did you feel?
Yeah, it's a strange one, but I suppose I had some experience riding pony racing, which gave me a feel for what to expect. But when you're lining up for the first time in a hurdle race or a steeplechase, and it is daunting and it's very new to you to be in that race environment at speed against older jockeys, hardened, seasoned jockeys, and they're not going to give you any easy ride. They're out to win. They're not out to do you any harm, but they're out to win. And if you mightn't have the clearest of passages through the race, so it's a big adjustment, and it's a learning curve. You have to grasp it quickly.
And when did you sort of realize that you were, because everybody goes in thinking they're going to be absolutely great and fantastic, otherwise you wouldn't get involved with the sport. But when did it actually start to dawn on you that you were actually, you know, pretty good at this thing? Or did you have the innate confidence from day one?
I probably had a lot of confidence just coming from the background I'd had with pony racing and pony clubs. So I did think I had a good bit of belief, self-belief, and that's probably something that carried me through my career on the darker days. But once I got racing and then started riding a few winners, it happened quickly. So as I dreamt of success, and you know, the dreams are coming true for me fairly quick. So I suppose it was happening for me because I was willing and able to take the opportunities.
Cheltenham. Tell me about Cheltenham, because it is the week. I mean, obviously it hasn't been for the past couple of seasons, but normally it is the week when seemingly all of Ireland's racing fraternity, you know, decamps to that certain part of the UK. What was it like doing your first Cheltenham, and describe the atmosphere for those who aren't horse people?
Oh, it's an FA Cup final. It's for 4 days. No, it's now 4 days. It was three back then. But yeah, it's an FA Cup final, or it's a Champions League. It is the atmosphere is unbelievable each day. And that is your season is judged by your success in Cheltenham. So it's where you want to get winners. Whether that's 1, 2, 3, 4, you need a score on the board. And there's some people can go through a career at a good level and never get the opportunity to ride a horse good enough to win at Cheltenham and not get that you know, more really important winner. It's as I say, your season is judged in your success at Cheltenham, but it is a monster, and it's like an FA Cup final or a European Champions League. It's the real deal.
And how do you get your head around it then? Because obviously there's a build up. You know, if you're one of the favourite, or if you've got a decent horse with you, what's the mindset? Because this book isn't just about, you know, okay, I rode this horse, I just happened to win 2,000 winners, etc. Ride 2,000 winners. But it's about the mindset. It's about physical toughness, mental toughness. How do you gear yourself up for a race or 4 days even, not just 90 minutes, where you are expected to deliver?
Yeah, I suppose it's something that I would have developed from a young age, was blocking it out, really. Because on a big stage like that, you can have a good ride in the first race and a good ride in the third race, and if the first fella gets beaten, you can't let that, you know, that emotion carry through to the next one and affect that performance. So you have to block out everything. You block out the noise on the build-up. You don't get sucked into the hype. But as I say, if a result goes bad for you in the first race, you can't let that affect your next one. You have to just block it out, deal with that later, and, you know, work with the moment.
And what's the physical preparation? Because you might, you know, because it is a physical sport, you know, and it is tough, and there are the jumps and there are falls. So what was your physical preparation like? And do you have the same struggle with keeping weight as perhaps the flat jockeys do?
The weight struggle probably wouldn't be as much as big a struggle as the flat, because you couldn't. If you were starving yourself as much as they do, you're going to break easy when you hit the ground. So you have to keep a bit more of a balance. Fitness is like any sport. You're running, you're keeping busy. But when you're busy racing, you're generally, that keeps your fitness right. But you could be going into the meeting with a cracked rib, or maybe a cracked wrist, or an elbow or fingers or anything. Paul Townend only last week in Punchestown had 3 broken bones in his foot. And he came back and, you know, 3 or 4 winners. So you're hoping to be going in to Cheltenham, the big meeting of the year, in one piece, not carrying an injury. So that's the most important thing. If you can get there fit and well and healthy, it's obviously going to improve your performance.
And, you know, I mean, this is a partnership. It's not just you, you know, on your own. You know, you have the horse with you. When you first come across a horse like Moscow Flyer or Monty's Pass, is there an immediate click? Do you just look at it because you've been involved with the business for a while now and you think, yeah, there's something special with this one?
There can be. Monty's Pass in particular, he was brilliant to jump from. The first day I rode him, he was so clever, he was so quick, he was so neat. I fell in love with him straight away. I did fall in love with Moscow, but I can't say it was the first day I rode him, because the first day I rode him, he ducked off the track and ran into an upright, and the two of us wound up on the floor. So I had question marks about Moscow the first day, but the second day I rode him, he won, and he won his next 3 after that. So I fell in love with Moscow quickly, but our first day was a little bit hairy.
And who would you say was your biggest then competitor when you were out there and competing? Do you mean what? You know, my big sport is motorsport, and there was a camaraderie between drivers. Is there that same sort of camaraderie between riders? Because you're both putting it all on the line, you're both risking injury, and your list of injuries is impressive. Is it a dog eat dog situation? Do you respect each other, or is there a real camaraderie amongst the other riders?
I'd say it's a good comparison to say the Formula One and the jockeys, because no, there is a good camaraderie, but you would have the odd fella who would be out for himself, and he would generally turn the pack against him maybe. But generally you have to work together, because it's such a high risk sport. You have to be helping each other through the race, giving a little bit of room when is needed, and a little bit of help and advice on a horse who someone else is riding that you rode previously. So it works very much like that. And I'd say with that environment of the high risk, it brings a friendship. There's a bond there, because we're all, you know, we are putting ourselves on the line. And when you're doing that, I think it really creates a closeness. So there is a great close environment. I would have ridden against great riders who I was very close with: Paul Carberry, Ruby Walsh, AP McCoy, Richard Johnson, brilliant riders, and generally had the same mindset that, right, you're out to win. It's not win at all costs. You're looking out for your friend as well. But there is a time in the race when you say, right, well, this is business end and I'm all in now. But generally through the race, you're looking out for each other.
I mean, you were involved in the sport, or you still are, you know, I'm not saying you have no contact with it whatsoever, but it's almost like a golden period. What changes did you see over the 20 years? More media exposure? Because the names that you know, AP McCoy, Ruby Walsh, are household names now. Is that, you know, are the riders now becoming more famous, more popular as the stakes get higher?
Yeah, well, I'd say there was a very strong group of riders back then with AP and Ruby and Paul Carberry. But yeah, it's social media, the attention is closer. But I suppose the big shift in the 24 years of my career, and it's probably the same in most other sports, the professionalism, you know, alcohol would have been a big thing in racing, as it would have been in rugby, golf, soccer as well. So I think the level of performance, the margins are finer. Everything has just got more professional. And as I say, social media, the spotlight is on riders more so. So there has been a big shift in the space of my career from the first 10 or 12 years to the second 10 or 12 years, were two different platforms, if you like.
You mentioned, you know, the letting off steam and the alcohol. I mean, there have been quite a few high profile cases across the world of racing, hasn't there, with that? I mean, it was traditionally, as you mentioned, in rugby and football, you know, it was a man's sport, and perhaps this was something that was expected.
Yeah, well, it probably reflective of the high risk as well, because then, you know, you go to the races, you take your chances, you ride a winner, you celebrate it, you get a fall, you drown your sorrows. So there's a bit of a vicious circle there. But, you know, most fellas handle it well, and some wouldn't handle it so well. But it's definitely not as existent as it was before. But as I said, that's reflective in golf, soccer, rugby, everything, because the margins are so fine. And results are, there's more intensity and pressure on results. That lads cannot be taking these chances and nights out before big races, and your fitness maybe not being as good as it should be.
The book talks about resilience and keeping going. You know, it's a thoughtful book. And especially after, you know, the months, the year that we've had, I mean, you've managed to keep yourself going and getting back on the horse. Do you think there are some lessons that you can apply and share to people who maybe had trouble keeping going because of what happened in the world?
Yeah, I'd imagine so. Self-belief was always something that I had, and I never questioned. So in the darkest days, when, you know, when my career, be it through a lack of quality of horses, when things were on the slide for me back in the late 90s, I believed. And whenever the opportunity arose, you would take it, and you were fully committed and didn't have the self-doubt. If you're doing something that you love and you enjoy and you believe in yourself doing, I think if you focus that, and when opportunity arises, you can grasp it and make the most of it. So that's something that I would have always, I suppose, it would have been a strength. And it was the same in the latter end of my career, coming back through injuries, just not having that self-doubt. It's just, it can be crippling, having that self-doubt, but not having it and believing and, you know, focusing and working on what you do and what you're good at.
Was it a case of thinking, well, you know, it is swings and roundabouts, you know, I'm going through a tough time now, but, you know, I've proven that I've been there before, I've been here before, and it can get better.
But that's it, exactly. It's just belief. You know, I remember being in Cheltenham a few years back, and, you know, results weren't coming early in the week, and Paul and my wife were saying to me, oh, I don't know how you can do it, how you do it. And I said, just wait, it'll happen. And on the third day, I read the first two winners. So it just, if you just stick with it, believe, focus, it will happen.
So we talked about, you know, the low points, the dark days, which you chronicle. Give me some highlights. When did you, you know, if not because I'm not saying it's all over now, but thus far in your illustrious career and whatever, you know, you go on to do after this, what would you say were the high points?
I was very fortunate with so many. Your first winner in Cheltenham is probably your most important and your biggest, because to get that score on the board, it eludes so many people, and to get it was amazing. It was brilliant. That was in 2002. I came back the following year. I won 5 winners in 2003 and won the English Grand National. So that was, to get that, and I was only 23 at the time, so early in your career, that level of success. The Grand National, we spoke about Cheltenham, but the Grand National as an individual race, that's the one that stops the world. The world watches the Grand National. When I travel, you know, anywhere in the world, people can ask you, what do you do when you see you're a jockey? The next question is, have you ever ridden in the Grand National? So to get that box ticked at a young age is massive. And then to go on, and most of it revolves around Cheltenham, Champion Hurdles, Gold Cups, they're the biggest ones. Sprinter, Sacre, Moscow Flyer, they were just amazing horses to have and to win on. But no, I've been very fortunate. I suppose to finish off my career in Cheltenham with 5 winners was probably the ideal way for me to finish off.
Yeah, go out while you're winning, as the saying goes. So why the book, Barry? I mean, it's been a great career. Why did you decide to put all this down? And what's it like getting so much praise?
Yeah, well, it was something that would have been on my mind over the years, but, and I was approached a good few times, but I never really felt I was in the headspace to do it. And I was approached a couple of years ago again, and I wasn't up for it. And then I was given a few other good autobiographies to read, and I read them, and I suppose I bought into the idea of it then to sit down and to do it properly, you know, to tell your story, you know, the good and the bad. And it was probably gave me good closure as well on my career, knowing that I was finishing up as the book was being released. But just going through all those highs and lows and reliving those moments, it really brought it back to me. When I reflected on my career, I was happy I was getting out at the right time. So the timing was good in that regard. And I've really enjoyed it, and the book has been well received, which is brilliant.
I mean, as a 16-year-old in the weighing room in Cheltenham, or when you first got your first jumps race, I mean, could you have envisioned a career as lengthy and as illustrious as the one you've enjoyed?
No, I wouldn't have dreamt for a moment. You dream of riding big winners, but you don't dream of doing it for 24 years and, you know, at the top level, thankfully, for so long. So it's, you don't dare to dream as big as that. You just dream little moments that you're hoping this might happen and that might happen. So no, I could never have dreamt that I was going to have as good a career as I had, and thankfully get out the other end in one piece.
Well, just about. I mean, you got out in one piece just about, but it's an impressive list of injuries. What are you up to? Where do we find you these days then, Barry?
Yeah, I do a bit of TV work, media work, have young horses as well at home, which is something I really enjoy. Some young Pied of Pointers with a nice horse ran last week. He was second and he's fairly exciting. So it's, I enjoy, I'm definitely working in the industry. I won't be taking out a trainer's license and going that route, but I enjoy the media work, and I enjoy just bringing on youngsters, nurturing talent. I had Bobsworth here as a foal until he was a 4-year-old, and sold him to Nicky Henderson, and then I won the Gold Cup on him a few years later. So that's something I've always loved and enjoyed, and that's what I'm sticking at.
And just as your thoughts, because we had the first female jockey to win the National. I mean, quite an occasion.
It was brilliant, unbelievable. And Rachel, you know, she wants to play it down, but she shouldn't, because it is such an achievement. She also had 6 winners in Cheltenham as well this year, so she's lifted the roof off the whole thing. I spoke to her during the week and punched her when I was getting a book signed for my 9-year-old daughter by Rachel. So, she's brilliant. But the rides she gave in Cheltenham were such a variety of styles, tactics, everything. And then to go and win the Grand National, it was the most amazing year for her, and it was brilliant for racing. It was the story that racing needed, because unfortunately there's been a couple of darker stories of late, and racing was really shown in a brilliant light, in its true light. And she's a super competitor, super person, and she's playing it down, but no, it's been an amazing year, an amazing achievement for her.
You have a 9-year-old daughter, so the next question is, if she shows an enthusiasm and an aptitude to go jump racing, what would you say to her?
Well, if she really wants it, she can, by all means, I'd support her, but I'd be very happy if she didn't. It was a rocky road.
The book is called True Colours. It's by Barry Gashley. Barry, if people want to find you, do you have a social media account? Is there a website? Where can they go?
Yeah, no, I'm on Twitter, Barry Geraghty, Barry J. Geraghty, I think it is. So I'm on Twitter. You'll find me there. That's probably the only social media outlet I have. So yeah, no, you'll find me on there, and I'm doing a bit of work for some different at the races and sport, Sky Sports Racing. I do a little bit of work for as well. So
how's your week panning out this week then, Barry?
Last week was hectic with Punchestown. I was on the TV 2 days, and I was doing a bit of radio work. So I was that was a full on week. The weather in Ireland looks as if it's going to be desperate for the week. So I'd say it'll be a lot of time indoors, and when I am out, I'll be getting drenched. So it's but it'll be a quieter week.
Well, listen, we know you're busy. This book is called True Colours. It's by Barry Geraghty. Barry, thank you so much for your time today.
Cheers, thank you.